Okay. Today is Thursday, April 20th, 2017, and my name is Scott Henshaw. I am in the Alumni House with current senior and veteran student Robert Feltz to conduct an oral history interview for the UNCG Institutional Memory Collection. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to start the interview by asking you about your background. Can you tell me when and where you were born?
I was born in Burlington, North Carolina, in 1979.
Okay. And can you tell me about your parents and your home life? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Sure. My parents are still together. Dad worked in manufacturing. Mom was a nurse for quite a while. I've got one younger brother who is actually currently serving in the Air Force.
Oh, great. How much younger is he?
About 7 years younger.
Okay. And can you tell me what schools you attended? High schools we're talking about?
Sure. I went to Walter Williams High School in Burlington up until my junior year when I decided that I was too cool for that school. And I left. I was working full-time. And so I decided I didn't need it. So I just took off. Later went back to Alamance Community College and finished up there with a GED.
Okay. And tell me about what kind of jobs you were doing while you were in school.
So when I was 15 or 16, I actually moved in with a Vietnamese immigrant family.
Oh, really?
My best friend in middle school was, his parents owned a nail salon in the local mall. So when I moved in with his family, they let me come in and do some sweeping up and answering phones and stuff like that, you know, for basically allowance. It was like $15-$20 a week maybe. But then I worked in a Chinese restaurant in that same mall for a while, part-time, and then I ended up working full-time while I was in high school as well in a local arcade. Mm-hmm. And I got promoted to a management position there, and I was making decent money, I guess, for somebody my age. Mm-hmm. So that played into a factor. Not a well-thought-out decision on my part, but it was, I thought it was a good decision at my time. And shortly after that, I did get promoted, and I moved to Asheboro for a very brief period.
Okay.
So that was my work during school.
All right. And so when did you start to think about entering the military? When did that become a possibility?
Well, I worked for 10 or 15 years on and off in retail management, and it was a job that I've grown to have great disdain for. Mm-hmm. I worked a couple of other jobs here and there, but around the time the economy sort of crashed in 2008, 2009, I started to think outside the box a little bit. Around that same time, my brother had gone into the Air Force, and he was having it was working out fairly well for him. So after my last retail job, lasted about a year, ended in late 2009, early 2010, I decided that I was just going to jump in the water, and you know, I went to the recruiter's office, told him, "Hey, this is my situation," and it was kind of all downhill from there. It was just signing paperwork and showing up when they told me to, and eventually got on the bus and made my way south to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, for basic training.
Okay, so your younger brother actually was in the forces before you in the
Yeah,
in
he was.
So you got a feeling for what it was like. I assume you talked to him and.
Well, yeah, I was sort of envious of the, I was envious of his schedule and his the sort of regularity of what he was doing. You know, working in a retail job, you know, full time, very rarely get any sort of holidays off or any weekends off. It's such an oddball schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to do everything with nothing, you know?
Right.
So he was telling me all about what he was doing and everything. And I was just, years ago before I had toyed with the idea of going into I had gone in and spoken to recruiters and things like that, but it was always just such a big, you know,
it is a big decision
leap. Yeah. Right. So, but after, you know, seeing him go in, you know, the mindset was, if he can make it through basic training, I can make it through basic training, you know?
Right. Yeah.
We've always had a pretty good relationship. So, you know, seeing what he was going through and listening to him, knowing that the Army and the Air Force are two different animals, You know, I just decided to do it, and it was either Army or Marines because of my age. And I was I'll go Army. It sounds
Tell me about this age requirement thing.
So at the time, the Army, I think, was cutting off their recruits at 37 years old. I think I was 29. I turned 30 years old in basic training, I believe. So even I was still considerably older than a lot of the people that were in my platoons and things like that. Mm-hmm. But the Air Force cuts off. Air Force has stricter standards. They cut off at an earlier age, 26 maybe.
Wow. Okay.
The Marines and the Navy is a little bit older. I think the Navy was around 36, 37 as well. And Marines, I think it was almost like 42 years old you could go in.
Wow.
But a lot of those standards changed after, you know, September 11th, and the more sort of drawn out these conflicts became, and they needed more people.
Right.
You know, they relaxed the standards a little bit. And since then, since pulling out of Iraq originally in 2011, they sort of tightened up the standards and stuff. So it's, I think now the cutoff for the Army is 35, 34, or something like that.
That makes sense. So you served in the Army, and can you tell me how long you served in the Army?
I did a four-year enlistment in the Army.
Okay. And can you tell me what your job was in the Army?
I was what they call a healthcare specialist, which is really a fancy term for a medic.
Okay.
So I went to basic training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and after that was 10 weeks, went to Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas, which is a joint, a lot of the medical training goes on for all the branches at Fort Sam. So was there for another 4 months, I believe it was. And then you get all your medical training there, then sent to your duty station, which in my case was Fort Hood, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And can you tell me, so how did that job come about? I know there are certain tests and things like the aptitude tests. Did you have a natural inclination toward it? Or
no. Okay. Honestly, I was, when I joined the Army, I was solely looking to get myself in a better position in life. Mm-hmm. There was everybody around me, you know, they had graduated college already, or, you know, they had established careers, and I was sort of just in limbo. So I decided to do something that maybe would have a future and would make sense financially. So you go in at a certain pay grade, but as you enlist, certain jobs are in more demand, so they will offer bonuses. And in infantry guys, a lot of the times, they'll get cash bonuses up front. My job, the 68 whiskey is the code for it. I think it was a $27,000 education bonus. So in addition to the normal GI Bill stuff, I would get this payment on top of that.
Okay.
And that made good sense to me. It was, if the Army didn't work out, if I hated it or just couldn't continue with it, I figured I would go out and just use it for college.
And this
college.
Was money you would get once you exited the Army?
Exactly, yeah. So I get out and I fill out a little paperwork, considerable paperwork. And, I mean, this is the whole reason I've been able to attend UNCG and finish out my degree.
Okay, that's cool. And so you didn't say you had natural inclination for it or anything. It was a job that had good prospects.
It had good prospects. You know, I liked the idea of it. You know, I did my research online. You know, there's a lot of, it's broad, I guess. There, you know, a medic can be, you can work in a clinic, you can, you know, do things like take blood pressure and, you know, do physical therapy and all sorts of other stuff. Or you can be attached to, if you're deployed, you can be attached to infantry units and engineer units and things like that. So there was a lot of different prospects to it. That was appealing. Mm-hmm. And I figured, I was like, you know, the medic will be treated fairly well, I feel like, if I get stuck with a big group of infantry guys, you know, I feel like the medic would carry a little bit of weight since there's generally only one medic and among like 50 infantry guys or something like that. So
So where did you end up being stationed overseas, and tell me about what your job was like when you were there?
We were stationed, so I got to Fort Hood, Texas. We were there for about 2 weeks, and then we went to Iraq. Mm-hmm. So we hit Kuwait for a few days, and then we fly into Iraq. And I was on what the Army called Cobb Adder, which was a central operating base. Okay. And it was also an Air Force base. They had their own name for it. And the closest city was Al-Nasiriyah. And we were a few miles away from the actual, like, city. We were kind of out in the middle of no man's land, I guess. But it was a pretty large base. Mm-hmm. For the most part, and had a big airstrip and things like that. There, I worked in a clinic for a little bit when we first got there and got adjusted. And then shortly after that, I got attached to an engineering battalion. Mm-hmm. And I got attached to a platoon within that battalion. And then we did basically route clearance the rest of our time there, which I sat in the back of a truck and, you know, we rode up and down the road at 5 miles an hour, mm-hmm. Poking things of trash to make sure they weren't bombs and things like that.
Wow.
So okay. That was, we sort of rode all over up in Iraq. Sometimes we'd stay in smaller bases and things like that overnight. But it was an interesting experience, to be sure.
Yeah. So can you talk about some of the differences between your stateside service, which is, I guess, more when you had your training, and then overseas?
Overseas, there's always something going on. Like, there's no days off necessarily.
Right.
You might get a rest day. You might get a day where it's not so bad. But, you know, at any given time, they can say, hey, you know, we need you to do this, that, you know. Or, you know, you would have a day where you thought you were going to have a little time off, and then, you know, mortars start flying in or something like crazy like that that's unexpected. And then, you know, you just have to sort of react. And there's a certain comfort in that, like knowing that regardless of what happens, like, you're on duty. Like, mm-hmm. there's no time off. And I know it sounds sort of strange, but it's, I know that I'm focused. Like, I'm on the job all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to worry about all this stuff. I don't have to worry about social gatherings with friends. I don't have to worry about, you know, necessarily what's going on at home as much. I was single, so I didn't have to worry about what my wife and kids might have been up to. Mm-hmm. I was focused on one thing, and that was my job. When you come back, when we flew back into Fort Hood, which we got back on a Christmas Eve, it was an interesting experience. We were supposedly the last people out of Iraq. Like, we were, mm-hmm. we closed up, you know.
Wow.
And, I mean, we know now that didn't work out as well as we'd liked, but...
Right.
We got back during the holiday. We moved into a brand new set of barracks. And this was my first experience with what they call garrison life, just a normal mm-hmm. on-base life. And I quickly realized it was not as... There's a lot of standing around
mm-hmm.
and a lot of waiting on other people. The saying, hurry up and wait, mm-hmm. is extremely accurate in that respect. So... you would go out, you would have a wide variety of things that you would be doing, but sometimes you might wait around 6 hours to get the okay to go do it. And it's stagnant is one of the best words I could use to describe sort of like that everyday on base life. And Fort Hood is a whole nother thing too, you know. You see Fort Hood pop up in the news headlines, you know, from time to time, and mm-hmm. it's a large base. It's everybody's kind of on top of each other, and, you know, tensions always seem a little high. So, I was always told that was just a bad place to be stationed, mm-hmm. and it was better everywhere else. But after 4 years, I was just like, I think I'm going to try my shot at college and see how it works.
Okay. So it wasn't any really one thing that steered you back to college.
Not particularly. I mean, looking back on it, there are things I loved about the Army. You know, I loved the variety of jobs that I did. You know, even just in the garrison life, I worked in a physical therapy clinic. My last summer there, they assigned me as a lifeguard for the recreation area. You mm-hmm. know, so I was responsible for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I got to go to promotion boards and just all sort of, like, a lot of very interesting training exercises and things like that. But at the same time, the main thing that made me leave, I think, was the fact that the way the promotion system works in the Army, it's sort of convoluted, and it's kind of ultimately based on points. Mm-hmm. And the points go up and down for your thing. So the max set of points is 700 and some. That's max. That's the government saying, we're not hiring or promoting any more of this particular job type. Mm. And when they'll drop them down to like 300 or 400 points, that means all the people in line start getting promoted. My particular job was not one that they promoted a whole lot of at the time. So, you know, I started to get passed up by people that were in less time than me, had less experience than me, and you're bound by the system, and it was all timing. I went to promotion boards and all that stuff. I wanted advancement really bad, but it just wasn't in the cards, and I could have stayed in for another 4 years and hoped that it would have improved, and I could have started making more headway. Or I could get out and try to go another direction with it. And that's ultimately the decision I went with.
Is there an option to change, career, job?
You can. You can reclass.
Starting over, I guess.
Yeah, you can reclass into another job, but it gets a little tricky with, you know, do you keep your current rank? You know, I was the grade of E4, so you go bare bones private, you have PV2 private, private first class, and then specialist. And I went to the promotion board, so I was promotable to sergeant if the points ever came down and they started promoting more medics into a sergeant position. Mm-hmm. And I think from the time I became promotable to the end of my military career, they were promoting maybe 2 medics in the entire Army, a month. Yeah. So it was a crowded field to be in, and I didn't want to try my luck at reclassing into something else.
Sure.
And some of the frustration stuff just kicks in too.
Yeah,
and
I understand that. Yeah.
I'm ready for a breath of fresh air.
Younger people coming in and getting.
That was something that was frustrating, and I never quite worked out whether it was something in my ego that was like getting crushed every time it happened.
Right. That's natural.
But I was ready to just change direction, and the Army had put me in a great position for that with the GI Bill money and the bonus money that I had signed up for, and I was able to pay off a lot of debts. I was able to pay off my car and get my credit situation squared away and do a lot of that stuff. So I, coming out of the Army, I was in a really good position to set myself up for success.
So how long after you left the Army did you start to think about going back to school? Or
right in. I was still at Fort Hood. I was doing my out processing stuff when I was speaking to people at UNCG on the phone.
Okay.
I had to do an interview over the phone because of the fact that I had never taken any sort of SATs before. Mm-hmm. I had that the GED, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, I had a checkered past with education. I guess they wanted to know, get to know a little bit more about me and see how I would fit in. Mm-hmm. And that went really well. And, I got approved and, started getting the paperwork filled out there.
Okay. So let's back up just a second. How did you come to decide on UNCG, or were you looking at other schools?
Close by. Okay. No, it was...
After you left Fort Hood, or even before you left Hood, you were already thinking you're coming back close to home?
I wanted to be back in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a little bit closer to my parents. They still take care of themselves fine, but with my brother being, you know, he's stationed in Hawaii right now.
Okay.
He's been there for a few years. So with him being, you never know where he was going to be, I figured that I would be closer to home, that I could, like, hang out with them, see them a few times a month. If they needed anything, I could be there to help. And it just made good sense at the time.
Okay, so was there anywhere else we were looking at to apply to, or is UNCG pretty much
it? UNCG was pretty much it. I had multiple friends that were that had gone here and were still going here for master's degrees and things like that nature. So everybody had really good things to say. I had been on campus a few times before when I was younger. So I sort of like, I had a pretty good idea of like what I wanted to, or where I wanted to be,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily what I wanted to do.
Right. So I'm interested, how did you, what, you were here when you were younger for school trips or for, or other things?
Less reputable things,
enough
probably.
Said. Yeah, okay. Well, I asked that because now we do a lot of programs for, and I didn't know how far back we did that. You know, we do a lot
yeah,
of programs.
It was, with it was
high
never anything.
Or even younger.
Never ever anything yeah, so. Sort of education related. You know, I always had friends in the Greensboro area, and, you know, any sort of college campus is always kind of a, and the surrounding area tends to be a sort of happening place to be. So, mm-hmm. you know, we just found ourselves around campus a few times. And, you know, it's always been a really nice, like, campus. So mm-hmm. even if you're just, you know, coming to visit, like, Yum Yum or something like that, it's always a nice place to walk around.
Yes, yeah. Much nicer than it used to be, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the transition from military life to civilian life and life at the university, how was that? Was that too hard for you, or how was that?
I never found it overly difficult. The military thing, like I said, I was older when mm-hmm. I went in, so I was used to being around younger people. You get lots of recruits that are coming in at 18, 19. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty used to being around that. I came back to Burlington, and I stayed with my parents for a few months over the summer. I briefly worked, a friend of mine owned a tire company in sort of Mebane, Burlington mm-hmm. area. And I worked for him briefly just to earn a little bit of extra money as I was filling out the rest of my paperwork. And it wasn't a big deal. I started getting in a class, and I guess it was a bit jarring to see. I remember noticing little things like how attached some of the students were to like their phones and their, you know, and things like that. I was expecting, I guess, a very proper professional, and I don't mean to like talk bad, but like I was expecting, and then I came in and I remember like sitting there and I remember seeing people show up to class in their pajamas, you know,
right.
And seeing people come in with like, you know, full Chinese, like they had gone to get Chinese takeout before they like coming into class and stuff. And like people that were just, you know, would be on the phone during class and things like that. And I was just, in the army, like yeah. I would have not hesitated to like raise my voice at, you know, right. seeing some of the sort of stuff that I saw. So there was a little bit of adjustment there. I had to like pull back and, you know, just sort of, realize it was a different environment, and you know, I'm older, it's a different thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was never a major issue or a cause of headache or anything. It was just like, right. wow.
Yeah, so yeah, I think you can attribute some of that to added freedom at the university level, and also just immaturity of, since you were a little bit older than that.
Sure. I mean, I was yeah. You know, I remember doing crazy stuff as when I was younger too, but it's just, it is a, when I was younger, I always told myself that I'll never be out of touch with technology. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm never going to be, my parents can't turn on a computer. I'll never be like that. And now I find myself, you know, every time I get a new phone, it takes me months to figure it out.
Right.
You know, so I'm just becoming a cranky old man. That's fine.
Nothing wrong with that. So is there anything you learned while you were in service that helped you in your college career?
It definitely helped instill more focus and discipline, I guess. Part of the reason I left school in the beginning and always had such a problem with it, I struggle like focusing on the important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I always struggled like getting stuff done. And even now I procrastinate more than I should, but it's, while I was in the military, it just sort of happened, you know, the basic training, you don't have a choice. It's just go, 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 go.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to be where you have to be, and there's not really a whole lot of calling in sick, or, you know, I don't mm-hmm. feel well, or, you know, I want to go do this. It's there. You have to do it. And I think that sort of instilled a little bit of, you know, urgency and focus when it comes to schoolwork and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I think it was, without that, I don't. That was just as important as the money that I got from the benefits and things like that. As far as I'm concerned.
So UNCG recently, particularly, has been recognized as a military and veteran friendly school. So would you agree with that in your experience?
I feel like it. Yeah, it is. I've never run into any sort of issues that are related that I find difficult. I've definitely found that people will seem to take that little extra step or pay a little bit more of attention if I say, "Hey, look, I'm a veteran. I'm using this GI Bill. Like, I need a little help on this, getting this paper." Mm-hmm. I feel like it was a fairly smooth process, as smooth as it can be when you're dealing with that sort of stuff. And the Veteran Resource Center we have over here is a really nice facility. It's completely open to like veterans. I'm getting more into what we've started doing with the Veteran Association, but it's. The university seems to really have our backs as far as like setting a lot of this stuff up and making sure that we have resources and things like that. And just down to little things, like when I graduate in May, I've got a special cord to wear, it's a red, white, and blue like cord to signify that, I was in the military and, now I'm moving on to this sort of next stage. So I don't have a lot to compare it to, I guess.
Right, sure.
So, but yeah, it's been a really good experience as far as that goes.
And did you know about that before you applied or during your application process? It's somewhat new for us. Like, I think maybe it started about 2008 or so.
It's been a few years. Yeah. Like they've been sort of getting that friendly military ranking. So I had seen it on when I first started looking into it. I had seen it, pop up a few times in my research and things like that. Now when I got here and got fully enrolled and everything, I was expecting a little bit more I mentioned the Veteran Resource Center over here, but I didn't know that it was really even a thing. I got a few emails from people, but it didn't seem to be active or anything very much.
That's why I was wondering. I didn't know if we had the center actually as a department at that time.
I didn't really know. And I even went in there to ask. I was looking my entire time here. I was actively looking for, veterans related groups or something like that, something that was doing something, on campus and in the community and stuff like that. And, I never really found anything. And then I was in a statistics class, and the guy that sat in front of me said that he was part of a group, this veterans group or whatever. And I was like, I was intrigued. I was like, well, what do you guys do? We go down to Jake's and we drink beer on Thursday night, and they give us free wings or something. It's like, that's cool. What else we got going on?
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And even going over to the resource center, it was under different people then, but there just wasn't much going on, and there wasn't a whole lot of information that was kind of available.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really feel like it was overly, it sounds really harsh if I say it wasn't welcoming, but it was just, there wasn't a whole lot going on, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
All the resources were still there, but it didn't feel, it's not anywhere I ever like hung out with until, later on, and we sort of started getting the word that they were going to try to establish a new round of officers and stuff like that over a kind of an absence of that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and talk about that. What's your position in the Student Veteran Association? Let's talk about what they do.
I am the current vice president of the Student Veteran Association.
Mm-hmm.
Our main goal coming into this. So I had mentioned that there were members before and there were officers before, and as I understand it, they didn't take the group seriously, and there wasn't they didn't really sort of meet up this they didn't meet the standards of what the university and really everybody else thinks a group should be, especially something veteran related. So they sort of disbanded a while back ago, and it went multiple semesters with nothing. So we got word, I guess a few of us got word that they were doing elections again. Mm-hmm. We put our names in, short bio, elections went on, and then we got the results. Mm-hmm. Our main goal was to stand this organization back up and be an organization that was not only active on campus, but really active out in the community, and provide resources and partnerships with that helped with the resume writing and all that mm-hmm. stuff that not everybody goes through the professional development office here and things, and then focus on things too, like the paperwork for GI bills mm-hmm. and stuff like that that's unique to the sure. veteran needs. We've been able to partner with our president. His name is Tyler Freeman, and he is a go-getter. He came in with a lot of really good connections with the Greensboro Bar Association and some other things like that. So we've partnered with them and done some. We've been working on a Habitat for Humanity build over the past month or so. We've done some volunteer work out at Peace Haven Farms, mm-hmm. which is a really neat little place out towards Burlington and Gibsonville, I believe. Okay. And they do it's a living community for people with disabilities or okay. something like that. And then we've done some stuff here, we've done social gatherings and things like that. Veterans Day, mm-hmm. Celebrations, which was kind of one of our sort of first things. And really just sort of trying to rebuild it into build a foundation for something that hopefully a next round of officers will be able to come into, and maybe they can get some more of the fun stuff added in and stuff like that, because we'll be leaving them with money this time, as opposed right. to we just came in with nothing.
Right. Do you have an idea of about how many members there are in the association
currently? If active members, I want to say between anywhere and 40 to 60. And when I say active, I mean they participate in the Facebook page and stuff like that. I guess part of our issue when we stood it back up was we realized that all the data that we had was outdated. Sure. So all the contact information and stuff like that, these people went long gone.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been trying to redo that. We've had a kind of a difficult time sort of purging that old data and trying to get the word out to newer people. And also it's sort of strange the way things are set up. You'd think that we would have a record of every single veteran that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
There is a record, but it's not something we normally have access to.
Right.
So, there's issues there with student information, sure. confidentiality stuff. So it's not been as smooth as we would like to get these sort of the word out and get people in. Although we've been really happy with people actively wanting to do the Habitat for Humanity build. We had a really good turnout for our first full week of build mm-hmm. On a Saturday. College yeah. people never want to give up their Saturdays, yeah. but we had a really good turnout. Same thing with the Peace Haven Farm. All the volunteer stuff has been really good, and our meetings have been getting better, so there's hope.
Yeah, that sounds great. Does this association also reach out to alumni of the university as well, or is that another?
There are some alumni, especially when it comes to fundraising and stuff like that. But one of the greatest things I've noticed, and I'm sure it happens elsewhere, but I like to think it's specific to the veteran community, is the fact that we generally don't have to twist a lot of arms or reach out. A lot of the times the alumni, when it comes to fundraising or special events, they show up. Mm-hmm. We don't have to do a lot of calling and hassling, I guess. And they'll show up on our doorstep and say, hey, what do you need us to do? What do you want us to do?
Mm-hmm.
And it's we have a, like I said, we have a Blue and Gold banquet happening in the next room over on May 1st. And, mm-hmm. We've had, alumni say, hey, we'll be there. We're going to make things happen. So it's we're blessed in that respect.
Yeah. I realize I left off questions about
We can go back.
As a student.
We can go back.
Can we talk about what your major is?
I'm a human development and family studies major.
Okay.
That is something I sort of ended up in. I came for nursing, and this is when we talk about our grand experience at college. My biggest sort of speed bump has been the early on communication and advisors and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was that was not something I was overly. I came in not knowing anything about college or how it worked or anything.
Not unusual.
It was overwhelming, and I had no idea what was going on. My first couple of advisors, I don't think they knew what was going on. You know, it was really difficult to get direction. It was really hard to get, understand what was going on with how the online system worked and registering for classes. And it was kind of a frustrating experience. And I wanted to go into nursing, and the advisor at the time sort of discouraged me from it. And mm-hmm. I took her at her word. I was just like, hey, if that's the case, then, you know, maybe I should look into something else. Mm-hmm. And I looked into public health, and I wanted to do public health. I went into an advising session, and they were like, oh, well, it's going to be a longer journey for you if you do public health. It's going to be like this, you know? And I was like, well, I was kind of on a timetable. I sort of had wanted to get out by a certain time and sort of set a plan out. And they were like, well, we've got this human development and family studies major, you know? And my whole goal was, didn't necessarily care about the major as long as it was something that was aimed at helping people in a, you know, on a more personal level, you know. The nursing stuff, you know, I could stick needles in people and things like that. I was sort of used to that already.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to take it to the next step. But also, you know, I had built up some good administration experience and sort of project management experience and things like that that I thought would work really well in public health. And the human development and family studies, one of the biggest things I saw when I was in the military, I mentioned 18, 19-year-old mm-hmm. young people coming in, something easy to avoid living in the barracks is just to get married
right
away. So I saw lots of 19, 20-year-olds getting married like right off the bat, sure. And it not going well. Lots of alcohol abuse and things like that. You know, when you're that young in the military, it's easy to get caught up in that sort of life. You know, it's very prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw, and like I tried my best tonight and say, hey, I've been there. I've made those mistakes. Like, try this. But it was hard. But I saw relationships suffer. I saw, people I was close to have a really hard time. And I saw children, like, get stuck in between. And that was always in my mind. So, you know, when the human development and family studies came up, it seemed like a very good mix of, a little bit of study of biology, psychology, sociology, over a lifespan. And with some focus on relationships and things of that nature. And I thought it was a very good way to go that would be easily applicable to many other things, combined with military experience and my previous management experience. I thought it would be a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up in it, and I've enjoyed it so far. Okay. And my advisors, I noticed almost immediately as soon as I turned over, the whole sort of chain of command in the in the HDFS department was a breath of fresh air.
Okay.
You know, I had people telling me exactly what I needed to do, where I needed to go, explaining things in detail, and that was just as big a that was just as important to me as the actual, like, you know, what I was studying.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been pretty happy with it so far.
Great. Are there any particular professors or classes that you've taken that you really stand out in your mind that you really liked? Or
I've had some professors that were, I would have liked to had more. Dr. Supple, he taught one of the earlier level, it was a child development class, and he was really, it was unfortunate because it's one of those classes where there's 150 people in there, mm-hmm. So he's up, but the way he spoke, the way he gave his presentations, and the way he used firsthand accounts of his own kids, was really good. Like I liked it a lot. He was very compelling. And Dr. Bulls has been superb. She was my advisor for a little while. She's in my last professional development class now. She's sort of in charge of it. She's incredibly knowledgeable. She has her hand in everything in a human development sort of department. So she's been really helpful as well. Within the human development, I think everybody has been like a pretty good professor. I guess you're always going to run across professors that you don't get along with, I've had a few of those, but they've all been outside of my particular field, and very few and far between. Most of the professors have been really good. A little overwhelmed, maybe, but they've all like done admirable jobs for sure.
Okay, that sounds like you had a good experience in that department.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are your plans after graduation? Do you have concrete?
Amazing question. My original plan was to try to go with the VA. I wanted to work with Veteran Affairs any way that I could to make things smoother. That is not the easiest process in the world, and with the way things have become and the sort of the current political climate and the change that's going on there, it is not conducive to expansion of what the Veteran Affairs wants. There was a hiring freeze put in place for a little while, which was unfortunate in my opinion. The Veteran Affairs is getting a sort of increase as far as budget goes now. However, the demand is more for surgeons and and doctors and full-fledged that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So the situation that I'm in, even though I am confident that I could do a lot to like sort of help pretty much anywhere that I've been put, it's not really in demand with the Veteran Affairs right now. So I've been looking, I've been doing an internship with the City of Greensboro in the Parks and Recreation Department of all things. And I've sort of developed this fondness for local government, and I've started to investigate like a master's of public administration or something like that. I've been in contact with somebody from UNC Chapel Hill and even here, and a few other things, and exploring that. I got to find a job first, and I've got a marriage coming up in October. Like, I got to get my life together before I commit to school again.
That's good. So did you get this job with the city as internship, you say?
It is an internship.
Did you get that through UNCG or on your own?
It was actually a good friend of mine. Okay. We had to do an internship to graduate for this last class. And I tried, really did. I wanted... with Habitat for Humanity, Salvation Army, all places like this, I was really trying, and I was just not having any luck, and sort of the deadline was coming up, and a good friend of mine, he's also going to be one of my groomsmen in October, I told him my situation. He was like, I think I can help you out. I think I can get you in. I know you. You work hard. You've got experience. You don't need a lot of supervision. He's like, I think I can get you in here and help you out and sort of still touch base on what your major is all about as well. So we set that up, and it's just been rolling ever since January.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about what you did?
Sure. His name is Josh Sherrick, and he got his master's here and got married here in the same building. And he is the arts and events superintendent for the City of Greensboro. He used to work with the special events office. All this National Folk Festival stuff that comes into town.
That's great.
That was him. Like, that was all him. You have him to thank for getting that in town. So now he's a little bit more, he has his hands in sort of everything as far as like, and we're based out of the Greensboro Cultural Center, next to LaBauer Park. And it was a time of transition for him. So he had come in, and then I came in right after him. And we've been doing a lot of improvements for that building, which has been around forever, it seems like, and not really had a lot of updates. So we've been trying to sort of bring it up to standard, I guess. But we've also, he's done a great deal to help me be hands-on with sort of something that's more relatable to the human development stuff. So, you know, I've observed classes that this the Creative Aging Network has done for older folks with the dementia and stuff. They do art projects and stuff like that. It's been shown to, you know, really help with sort of cognitive function and memory and things. We just last week we did the senior games, so we officiated the senior game. I got to officiate and learn everything about croquet. So that was a pretty entertaining experience, you know. It gives me something to sort of bring back. But also, you know, just everything that happens in local government that, you know, especially in the arts and events department and parks and recreation, the stuff that they do for the community, the resources that they try their very best to make available to the community, from arts programs to, you know, drama to, you know, all sorts of things like that. And that it's that sort of access that can make a young person that can, those sort of resources can make a big difference, you know, in a young person's development, you know, as they aspect all through, you know, whether they're a toddler or, you know, getting up into high school and, you know, college and things like that. And that's what this department sort of is all about, you know, and trying to bring, as well as large events like, you know, festivals and things like that, you know, it's also, you know, how can we, you know, make this sort of thing available. And that holds a particular interest. It's a little more macro that, you know, than being the hands-on maybe in elementary school or something like that. And, you know, that holds a certain appeal to me. So it's been a pretty valuable experience.
Yeah, sounds great. All right. So we'll do like a conclusions part here. Just two questions about that. So, can you tell me how UNCG has affected your life and what it means to you?
UNCG has allowed me to... I mentioned earlier that the military helped me sort of like reset things. UNCG has helped me add direction from that. It's also helped me realize that I have very high standards for myself and those around me. And it's really sort of given me a confidence booster. I thought I was going to get smoked by these young people, like in school. Like, I thought like that everybody was going to be so far ahead of me and things like that. And it turns out that my age and experience, like on my end, has proven to be a really valuable tool that's helped me stand out, you know, and it's been a huge confidence booster. When I log on to Canvas and I look at the spread, the statistics of, you know, where my score lies in the whole class and see it way, you know, way high. That sort of thing makes me feel good. It's like, okay, I'm not wasting my time. Like, I know what I'm doing. Like, I have something to offer. So, it's definitely built me back up. And, you know, when I graduate in May, I graduate with honors, and that's not something I never saw myself graduating college, period, much less with honors.
Yeah, that's great.
So I'm pretty happy about all that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we're doing these interviews as part of the 125th anniversary of the university, which is an excellent opportunity for reflection, but also helps us to think about where we're heading in the future. So I'd like for you to tell me what's the future for UNCG? Where do you see UNCG going as an institution in the next 20, 30 years?
I feel that they're only going to get stronger as time goes on. There are a few things that I hope they can sort of reconsider. As when you get bigger, the the demand for more fundraising and stuff like that comes into play, and it's completely understandable. However, sometimes I worry that they're losing focus, and it's becoming more of a, it's becoming more about, hey, buy this, like, help us out.
Mm-hmm.
My parents have gotten multiple letters in the mail, requesting that my parents buy a $200 or $300 like diploma frame from the library.
Right.
And I'm like, that seems a little excessive. But in the grand scheme of things, that is a minor, a minor detail. I make it sound worse than it really is. UNCG has got the best population. It is such a diverse campus, and it is an open campus, and the staff and administration and faculty, everybody seems to be like very inclusive and very supportive of multiple ways of looking at things and everybody's background and things like that. It seems like a very safe place. It warms my heart to see in sort of the current view of like immigrants, especially from Middle Eastern immigrants and stuff like that, we can have a conversation like on campus, and everybody can walk around on campus no matter of what you're wearing, what your religious views are, if you're wearing your hijab or whatever it is. And it doesn't seem like anybody bats an eye, which is the way we all wish the world really was.
Yeah.
So that is one of the biggest strengths, I think, of UNCG. And I think as it goes on, it's going to be really sort of an invaluable thing. And they're becoming even more of a pillar of Greensboro. I mean, it's between UNCG and A&T, they sort of improve everything they touch. And my only, I just hope that it continues to be student-focused and definitely the students' best interest at heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand that the larger you get, the more is going on, and it's sometimes even the best people lose focus, whether it's business, school, or military life. It happens to everybody. And it's a natural process, and just sometimes you just have to step back and say, hey, are we doing the right thing? And I think UNCG is. So
great. Well, that's all the formal questions I have for you, but if there's anything else you want to talk about from anything?
No, I was really glad to have this opportunity. I saw the email come through, and I replied immediately, and I think it's a good thing. I think it's very valuable to have a good understanding of history, and it'll be good, whenever somebody comes back and looks at some of these interviews that you're doing, it'll be a really good reminder of, hopefully how far we've come from, where we're at. And it's always good to sort of look back and reflect on things. And I think it's a good thing what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for doing it.
Absolutely.
It's good to have you here.
Absolutely. Thank you.